A61, number 6B.
Yes. So we'll see in the text very often that we have such statement as you quote, that sin, sickness, and death do not belong to the divine mind. But this does not indicate really a counterfeit of mind. See, if it says, this car does not belong to me, then the car is not a counterfeit of me. We have to be very clear about that, you see, that if something does not belong to divinity or to reality, doesn't it make it a counterfeit? Huh? So, it belongs to mortal mind, and therefore sin is then the counterfeit of soul. Death is the counterfeit of life. Sickness the counterfeit of truth. But there it will be brought out and say that death heals or overcomes, life overcomes death. She may not say that life overcomes sin. There it is then, a counterfeit, because it's the fact about something. Yeah. All right, so going back to the noumenon, counterfeit, we can really have a very simple list of counterfeits in mind. I would just feel it is mortal mind, it's animal magnetism perhaps as a special kind of mortal mind, it's matter. And all the others which we have taken, they are just indications like ignorance, you see. There was no special reason to take ignorance out of the whole list and say ignorance is a counterfeit of knowing. But leave out other things like what is the counterfeit of law, what is the counterfeit of power. All that we left out because we felt, oh, what's the use of going right through the whole list again and enumerate the counterfeits. But for your study, you know that every idea has its counterfeit beliefs. Yeah. Okay. So, this is about counterfeit. Now, I come back to those qualities which we have here and there touched upon, which are translated qualities of mind. Meaning the following proposition. See, Miss Zeddy always teaches the aim and the way to the aim. She doesn't just teach the aim, just reality as such. Because if she would teach reality as such, she would have to write the textbook on divine science. If she writes a textbook on Christian science, then she must write a textbook which includes both. Namely, what is reality and how do we reach that reality? Somehow she has to translate that reality to the point of human thought, to the human level, so that from the human level where we are before we are illumined, that we know what is necessary at the point of the human level really to build a bridge into the one and only reality there is. Therefore, you can see that most metaphysics of a mystical approach will not show the way. They show reality. That's why these mystics write such wonderful books, because they show the wholeness of being, the oneness of being in its wholeness, and there is nothing incomplete and imperfect in the wholeness of being. And so it's so wonderful. You feel like on cloud nine. Whereas Christian religion is Christian, which means that it has a saving effect, that it shows the way. Jesus said, I'm the way. What does he mean? I'm the method. What method? He wants to show the way how the human can somehow be awakened to the point where the human accepts the divine. So Mrs. Eddy's textbook is full, actually more sentences are really written in showing how the divine translates itself to the human and how the human has an approach to the divine. If you think prayer, starts with prayer, the whole textbook. Well, God doesn't pray. God doesn't pray at all. God doesn't need a prayer. So you can see the whole chapter on prayer, and afterwards atonement and Eucharist. God doesn't need an atonement and Eucharist. Afterwards marriage. God doesn't need marriage. You can see right away that especially the beginning of the textbook is all written for the purpose of taking the reader where he is, in his ignorance, in his imperfection, and say to that state of thought, I show you a way how, in the best way, you can find your reality, your true identity, your true oneness with being. But it is a way. And so also, when one studies the synonymous terms, one comes across many statements where you perhaps have felt, well, in this statement, Mrs. Eddy doesn't say anything about the nature of the synonymous term. See where you, when you went through those references, you said, well, in this reference, I don't see any quality that is brought out which would characterize mind. And that's absolutely right that way. But when you look at them, many of them would show what qualities are necessary that enable us to be at one with mind. Therefore show the translated quality of mind as a human motion, so that the divine as the human is shown forth and shows that's the way to approach mind. That's what builds a bridge to your oneness with mind. And these are quite a number of them. Especially in the beginning, you may have felt that for quite a while you couldn't say, well, mind is this and that. You always would feel, she doesn't say anything about mind. She always says what quality is needed of the student in order to study mind, in order to be one with mind, in order to reach mind, in order to approach mind, in order to be at one with mind. Can you hear? The approaching qualities in mind. Therefore, those qualities are not actually ideas qualifying mind, and yet they have something to do with mind. They still are characteristic for mind because they are translated form of mind. She says that she had to be a willing disciple. Can you hear? A willing disciple. What are these are qualities. Mind is not a disciple. Mind is not willing. Mind is the will. Huh? And yet you feel these are qualities that have to do with mind somehow. Namely, how they appear in the human. If I'm a willing, you see, a willing, which means if I lay down my human will, but I'm willing to investigate a disciple, if I'm willing to learn, if I'm willing to study, if I'm willing to reason, can you hear mind? Mind has to do with intelligence, with reason. Therefore, she brings out those qualities over and over and over, showing how the divine is reflected as human qualities which are opening up the door for the divine. And therefore, it's quite practical, really, to give heed to these qualities. She says that she was waiting all her life for the mind of Christ. Can you hear waiting? Well, mind doesn't wait. That's not an idea. But the attitude within us, that constant attitude of the first beatitude, which says, I know that I don't know. Blessed are the poor in spirit, waiting for the mind of Christ, is an attitude which is receptive for understanding what mind is. Therefore, it builds up those qualities within us that we have to culture and culture in order to be in a position where we are touched, really, by the one mind. Therefore, can you see how all these qualities turn around that sense of, I don't know, but I want to know. I know that I don't know, but I want to search. It's all about a willing disciple waiting for the mind of Christ, that we have to be a student, you know, one who thinks correctly, investigates correctly, desire that mind will mold our desires. Mind will mold what? Our desires. And you can see desire is the longing to know. It's a longing to know. So this is a positive quality, but it's still human. But it's a necessary quality so that the divine mind can come and come in so that we are receptive for the mind. That thought must be in rapport with the divine mind. Can you see again? It has a mind sense. Can you see that it has a mind sense? Yes? All right. You tell me why it has a mind sense.
Rapport is to know something.
Yeah, you see? It's again to know something, to be acquainted with something. Can you hear? It's now a new term, to be acquainted, and yet you hear at once now that it has something to do with mind and not with spirit, or not with soul, and not with life. Yeah? She says that we have to commune with mind, again in rapport, again acquainted, again studying, again investigating, again in the state of receptivity. That we have to investigate the signs of mind. Investigate is again. Can you hear? They don't change very much, these terms, these human terms. Spiritualization of thought. To let in the light of mind. Again, that acceptance of the mind, which says, I don't know, I let the light of mind come in. All that is showing also the touch of mind. And therefore, when you go through the references again, and you should go through them every year once or twice through all the references, take heed of that. Because it begins, you see, what it does, it begins to sort out things begins to structure your tone of mind and begins to show what are, for instance, here, those qualities which are a translation of the ideas of mind when they are translated in the phenomena of the human. Remembering, they are still mind. Remembering what we said about the cylinder. That the cylinder remains a cylinder, but the phenomena can always look different. But the identity remains. It's just a matter on which level, on which plane, on which dimension I consider it. So as a student, as a learner, I can see that the ability to, and the willingness to study, the willingness to investigate, the willingness to search, the willingness to be open Can you hear all this? It's all mind. It is not spirit. That's not soul. When we come to spirit, we find quite different qualities that are necessary in the human to be open for spirit, to be open for soul, to be open for principle and life and truth and love. Yeah? So, we should not mix up those human qualities with ideas of mind. But we should see that they have to do with mind, but not as ideas, but as translated qualities to the human concept. And if we know them, what's the use of it? The use of it is that we can see, as a student, we have to watch our thought, that we are first culturing these human qualities and are aware of them and can see that if I don't seek, I cannot find. If I study the synonymous term mind without a seeking thought, it will never really reveal itself. If I don't study, if I don't investigate, if I don't desire it, if I don't let my thought be molded by the divine mind, I will never find it. Therefore, we can see the very great practical importance of these qualities, though they are not ideas of mind itself. Okay. Before I leave that, would you like to ask something or discuss something about this point? Yes? No? Good. In this case, we take question 6. Do you have your notes on question 6? We go through these references together. They are now very simple to you. They have studied them, and yet I feel we should talk about it once more. We have there, under A, the idea of power. And I've given there a few references. They are all references on power. The common denominator of all those references is that the term power appears. Now, put yourself into the position of defying our findings. Put yourself in the position of a critic of John Dorley's findings. Can you defend John Dorley's findings? Which is what? That he said, power is an idea characterizing mind. Power is an idea characterizing mind. Can you defend this proposition when a critic comes along and points out to us in the text that Mrs. Eddy speaks about the power of spirit, the power of principle, the power of truth, and the power of love? Did I state the proposition rightly and clearly? This is what happens. See, this is what happens when the students of Christian Science, who do not go along with us and who feel that John Dorley was making up things, will say, Mrs. Eddy, black on white, speaks about the power of spirit. How can you defend that? So let's take, for instance, a power of spirit. Let's take 316 8. Now, I would say to you, you know, you make things up. Power is not an idea of mind. Power is an idea of God, and therefore an idea of all the seven synonymous terms. Here, on 316, you have a very clear statement. Christ's truth was demonstrated through Jesus to prove the power of spirit. Now, you can't say you can't read. It's black and white. It's the power of spirit. What are you going to do?
Spirit has its power over the flesh because flesh is the positive opposite of spirit. That's a specific error.
Yeah. Well, it is, I would have to read further, the power of spirit over the flesh. Which would mean, and we must be absolutely clear about this once for all, you know, which would mean, what is the main proposition in this sentence? Is it the proposition that spirit over the flesh, or is the main proposition that there is power? So the main proposition is spirit versus flesh. That's the key to it. It's as simple as that, but it's a key that you have to remember. All the big things are simple. Therefore, we must always read the textbook, not as words, but always as stated as stated themes, and be able to distinguish what is in the sentence, in the hierarchy of a sentence, what is the highest hierarchy of the theme, which is the secondary, which is the third, and so on. Here you say the highest hierarchy of the subject is spirit versus flesh. A secondary is that in order that the spirit can overcome the flesh, it must have power to do it. So power is secondary, not primary. Yes? Therefore, and now this is the conclusion, therefore, it is always the primary subject that rules the use of a synonymous term. You know what I mean? The primary subject, namely, how can I overcome the flesh? Therefore, flesh is in the hierarchy of the sentence, the main thing. What can I do with that flesh? The answer is flesh. What is the opposite of flesh? Now we see the necessity of knowing our counterfeits. The fact about flesh is spirit. It's not mind, and it's not soul. The counterfeit of that matter flesh, of that bloody matter flesh, is spirit. And therefore, no matter what is being said about how to overcome that flesh, it must always be spirit. It's the power of spirit to overcome flesh. Or it could be the law of spirit to overcome the flesh. Or it could be the authority of spirit to overcome the flesh. You see, the secondary doesn't matter from which synonymous term it is taken. If it's law or power, authority or eternality or indestructibility or I don't know what. The main interpretation is flesh versus spirit. And that rules the sentence. That rules the use of the synonymous term. Can you see that a right understanding of the synonymous terms gives you the first clue of scientific interpretation versus inspirational, mystical interpretation, where you are no more allowed to interpret, Mrs. Eddy, the way it flows to your consciousness and the way you feel about it and the way you are inspired about it. The text itself dictates the interpretation of the text. Yeah? Okay.